It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Still going. Good night. Touchdown.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
We have made it to hour number two on a Wednesday edition of Overtime. We got on the air at 10, off the air at noon, making way for those Minnesota Twins to hopefully find a way to win the series against the Houston Astros. That game underway at 12:40, a noon pregame show right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Also tonight, right here on ESPN Sioux Falls, you can check out game two of the Western Conference Finals in the NBA. That game coverage beginning at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. Well, there was no way the Eastern Conference Finals first game could keep up, could keep pace, could even compete with what we saw in game one of the West, until it did last night. Cleveland was the better team for the majority of the contest. They led by 22 points on the road in the fourth quarter until they didn't. The Knicks came back storming, found a way to push it into overtime. Couple nice bounces, a lot of defensive vacancies, courtesy of one James Harden. And then meeting the moment in overtime, it was pretty much no contest. You went into the overtime break, you said, oh, I wonder what the Cavs are going to do. The answer, absolutely nothing in the overtime period. Knicks blitzed their way through that to a 115-104 final to take a 1-0 lead in the series. Jalen Brunson, certainly a big star. Before we dive into that, the remainder of the show, Aggie baseball head coach Tim Huber in about 20 minutes, and in about 30 minutes, 35, we're talking Kansas City Chiefs draft recap, offseason preview, Mahomes update, Kelsey talk, of course, on the way with Chris Clark of Locked On Chiefs coming up at about 11:40. Let's go ahead and dive in to the Knicks' victory in overtime, a 22-point deficit in the fourth quarter. Now, how was Jalen Brunson communicating with his teammates at that stage that propelled them to an improbable win?
Keep fighting, keep chipping away. You know, we're not going to get it back in one possession. Most importantly, sticking together. And no matter how that game finished, habits translate. And so they get transferred to the next game. So just finishing the game strong, regardless of whatever's going on, making sure we're having the right habits. So we'll be going the next game. You know, we're doing what we're doing. You know, we're not just giving up. No, we don't want to give up ever. And so just having faith in each other.
Jalen Brunson post-game having faith. 38.6 assists for Brunson in that come-from-behind win. Kenny Atkinson, the coach of the Cavaliers, under fire this morning for numerous reasons. Not using timeouts early in the rally for New York. Not using timeouts in the middle of it when it was getting out of control. Latter stages, or even on the final possession of regulation where they had an opportunity to close out the game. Here's Atkinson on if he considered benching James Harden, a topic in which he's also coming under fire for not doing.
No, listen, he's been one of our best defenders in these playoffs. I trust him. You know, smart, great hands. Didn't think about that. James is good most of the game. Listen, we weren't great defensively in the fourth quarter, you know. And like I said, you know, the ball stuck a little bit too much. You know, that was a key.
And that was Kenny Atkinson, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. As for the Cavaliers on the floor, Donovan Mitchell talking about moving forward after such a brutal loss in game one.
I cannot explain this. This is a self-inflicted wound.
Apologies, wrong clip there. We'll hear from James Harden how to bounce back moving forward.
James, where's the team's mentality after a game like this? Obviously, you're going to lose games in the postseason, but to be up so big, so late, how is it harder to flush a game like this?
No, you know, we're a super confident team. You know, obviously, we understand. You know, we literally let one slip away, but we got a lot of positives out of this game. You know what I mean? So we just watched them, figure out what we can correct, and put an entire game together.
And that's James Harden, certainly egg on the face last night in that loss, particularly on the defensive side. Here is Myron Metcalf saying, James Harden, you just had one job to do last night, bud.
James Harden has to impact the game somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if you're not going to be good defensively, you have to be an effective offensive player.
Right.
Like you have to do something. That's why you were brought to Cleveland, to impact moments just like that. You're up 22. The crazy thing is, Q, no one was asking him to be a legend.
Right.
Like James Harden didn't have to play like a Hall of Famer in that moment. He just had to not be terrible. And he couldn't avoid that on either side of the ball. And I just don't know how you adjust. Mike Brown said that to make it very clear that they don't care if the Cavs know it. And right. that's how confident you know that they are.
So a lot of finger pointing going around. James Harden, Coach Kenny Atkinson, Chris Canty says, don't skip Donovan Mitchell in that finger pointing exercise today.
I'm going to put some blame on Donovan Mitchell, because you can't have one made field goal in the last 20 minutes of the game where the opposing team ends the game on a 44-11 run. Can't happen. Don't give a damn about James Harden, Jalen Brunson, what the Knicks did, Landry Shamet, being a fourth quarter adjustment for Mike Brown. None of that matters to me. You have one made field goal in the last 20 minutes of gameplay. He got to this point. You're in the championship rounds. You have game one in a stranglehold, 22-point lead, and you can't close the show. And then you go missing in terms of your playmaking and your scoring. I can't buy that.
That's Chris Canty on the play of Donovan Mitchell. Very limited good looks offensively. Ball movement wasn't there either late in the ball game. A 115-104 final. Lastly here, the resilience of the New York Knicks is just woven into their DNA, according to Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News.
Resilience has kind of been one of those through lines for this team, going back to last year under Tom Thibodeau, because he established that blue-collar mentality. But even this year, there's been situations where, you know, the Knicks could have sat down and rolled over, and they decided, hey, you know what, we want to fight for something bigger than just this win right here. These are the wins in terms of the playoffs. This is why you go through those stretches during the regular season. Everybody calls the regular season a tune-up. This is what it prepares you for. It prepares you to be, you know, ironically down 22 in the fourth quarter of the conference finals game one, and to push your team back from being down that much. So it's difficult. If you ask any of the guys in the locker room, they'll tell you they'd much rather not be down, obviously 20-plus in the fourth quarter. But it does show you kind of the DNA that this team's made of. They're not going to back down. They're not going to lay down. And this time around, it was the Cavs who laid down. They were up 22 in the fourth, and they blew that lead.
115-104 the final. Moving forward into the bigger news of the day in the NBA. That is the Jason Kidd, no longer the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. Here's reaction from Kendrick Perkins.
Well, this was way past due. This relationship had been running its course. J. Kidd wanted out of Dallas last year once they traded Luka. He's not a coach that's with the rebuilding. He's a coach that wants to win championships. And so when you think about where they're headed, they traded Anthony Davis. Yes, he done an outstanding job for us building up and putting Cooper Flagg in the right position. But Jay Kidd is a coach that wants to win now. He is not looking in the near future or looking down the line 5 or 6 years from now. And so he wanted to go his own separate ways, and rightfully so. And I'm going to say this. Jay Kidd is just the first domino to fall. I wouldn't be surprised in the next 2 to 3 weeks if we see some more movement in that Mavericks organization for us, a guy named Kyrie Irving.
There you go. Kendrick Perkins on the latest there. Jason Kidd out after 5 seasons guiding the Dallas Mavericks. Game number 2 tonight in the Western Conference Finals. Spurs at the Thunder, 7:30 coverage on NBC. San Antonio, a 1-0 lead. OKC, 6.5-point favorite tonight. And you can also listen to the game tonight, game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, beginning at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN Sioux Falls. In the NHL, Stanley Cup playoffs begin the conference finals tonight in the West. It's the Golden Knights at the Colorado Avalanche, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado's a -190 favorite on the puck line, but that was before the news we got just 3 minutes ago that Cale Makar will be missing game one. Listed as day-to-day moving forward, out tonight, according to head coach Jared Bednar. Again, Cale Makar out for the Colorado Avalanche tonight at home in Denver, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Puck drops in the Western Conference Finals against Vegas. Thursday night, Canadians and Hurricanes from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on TNT. And the USHL Hockey Clark Cup Finals continue on Friday night, 6:10 from Muskegon, Michigan, home of the Lumberjacks. Stampede beating the Lumberjacks, leading the Lumberjacks 2-0 in a best-of-5 series. Game 3, Friday night at 6:10. Latest on the Stampede and their search for a fourth-ever Clark Cup trophy is sfstampede.com. Major League Baseball in the AL Central yesterday. Cleveland beat Detroit 4-3. Boston handed Kansas City a home loss 7-1. White Sox keep on moving and grooving. They beat Seattle on the road 2-1. And that was the same final yesterday for Minnesota. They lost to Houston by the score of 2-1. Zebby Matthews took his first loss of the year. Here's Derek Shelton on the young pitcher's performance despite the loss yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I mean, you know, he gave up the base hit and then the homer. He made a bad pitch on the homer, but, I mean, other than that, pitch well. I think the thing that was the most impressive is in the sixth inning, you know, pitch 85 to 100 or 84 to 100. I mean, his stuff continued to tick up. Not just the velocity was there, but just the sharpness of the total repertoire.
That's manager Derek Shelton on Zebby Matthews. With yesterday's loss, he is 1-1. With yesterday's loss, the Twins are 22-27. They will also be without Ryan Jeffers in the near term. A broken hamate bone in his hand wrist area for Jeffers, the Twins catcher. Here is the veteran on the injury and a very positive outlook.
I wouldn't call it disappointing. It's an unfortunate time, but you know, if you're going to have an injury, like having like the most predictable, like, you know, it's such a straightforward timeline, such a straightforward surgery. It's completely out of my control. You know, it doesn't matter how much I prepared my body to be healthy and get ready for the season. You know, this was something that was just going to happen. I don't think it puts a damper on anything what I was doing. You know, there's a chance I'm back in 4.5-5 weeks and we're ready to rip again. So, like, I'm not going to put like a set timetable on it, but there's plenty of guys who come back in 4 weeks or some guys who come back in 6 weeks. It kind of just comes down to how you feel when you start moving again. But the timelines are pretty predictable. It's a predictable surgery. The outcomes are pretty predictable. So if I'm going to get hurt with anything, I'd rather it be something that, you know, it's a one-time thing. It doesn't go on the injury report going forward. And, we, you know, we kind of move on. I come back with over half the season left to go.
That's Ryan Jeffers, a very positive outlook moving forward. I am not a medical professional, so I had to look up and educate you as well of what the heck a hamate bone is. Is it in your hand? Is it in your wrist? The answer, yeah. The hamate bone is a bone most commonly fractured when a golfer hits the ground hard with a golf club. Surprise, I don't have broken hamate bones. Or the downswing of a hockey player hits the ice with a slap shot fracture, usually a hairline fracture, going to be on the outside of your wrist, opposite of your thumb. The hamate bone, the latest hairline break fracture for Ryan Jeffers. Other Twins news yesterday, Royce Lewis sent down to the minor leagues, optioned. Here is general manager Jeremy Zoll on what it'll take for Royce to work his way back to the show.
We want to see, you know, the player, the confidence, the performance that we know he's capable of. And, you know, if he's performing down there and the underlying metrics support the performance, and, you know, then we'll be ready to bring him back and have him help us.
And that's the latest from Twins territory. Minnesota 22-27. They will meet the Astros in the rubber match of the series this afternoon, 12:40 start, noon. Your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other scoreboard updates, D1 softball action continues, begins at the Lincoln Super Regional Thursday at 8 o'clock at night, ESPN2, as 4-seed Nebraska plays host to 13-seed Oklahoma State. Game 2 Friday at 4, ESPN2. Game 3 Saturday at 4, if necessary, will be broadcast on ESPN. D2 baseball, Augustana punched their way beyond Pittsburgh State and others to win the regional. Onto the super regionals that begin on Thursday. Augie will see the Mules of Central Missouri Thursday at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday game 3 if necessary will be at 1 o'clock. Augie or Central Missouri will be participating in the D2 College World Series from Cary, North Carolina in the near future. Into your Reliant Bank headlines of the day, biggest news of the day came down in Vermilion, where there's a change, a notable change in the softball program of the USD Coyotes. Here is the latest and greatest there. The official announcement from USD was very, very brief. South Dakota Athletics announced that there will be a change in leadership for the softball program. A national search will begin immediately for the next South Dakota softball head coach. That's it. That's all at goyotes.com. We also put in the story a retweet from Matt Zimmer of Sioux Falls Live, noting just days after USD softball made history, Coach Robert Wagner no longer the head coach. He says he stepped down. School released a terse statement that did not mention his name. And we also read Coach Wagner's statement back in hour number 1. You can find all of that at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. But Wagner saying, in short, it has always been my intention to finish my career at USD. Therefore, I'll be stepping away as the head coach of USD softball. Thanks to all the players who have given so much to the program, to the current team. Well done. We left it all on the field. Go Yotes. So a transition in leadership, you would think Coach Shannon Pivovar, assistant coach, would be a really darn logical, rock-solid hire as the future of that program. We'll just have to wait and see. Keep you updated moving forward on the happenings for Coyote softball down in Vermilion. South Dakota State set to open up Summit League tournament baseball play today at noon. They'll match up with top seed Oral Roberts, a team that is 22-6 in the Summit League this year. SDSU is the 4 seed at 12-15. 2 seed Omaha meets 3 seed Northern Colorado at 6 o'clock this evening. Stay up to date at GoJacks.com. And for the 5th time in 6 years, 13th rated Augustana baseball team will be playing postseason baseball in Warrensburg, Missouri. Vikings will take on number 22 Central Missouri yet again, this time in the NCAA Super Regional. The best of 3 series begins at 5 o'clock Thursday, 5 o'clock Friday. If necessary, game 1 o'clock on Saturday. Full preview at GoAuggie.com. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number 2. When we come back, we'll dive right in to some Augustana Viking baseball talk. Always a busy coach this time of year, it seems, and always so gracious with his time as well. Augie baseball head coach Tim Huber joins us next as we continue to make our way through an early edition of Overtime. Twins on the air at noon. Game 3 of the series against the Houston Astros. We're talking Augie baseball next on a Wednesday. Head coach Tim Huber joins us after this on ESPN Sioux Falls.
College hoops and NBA basketball, the NFL and Major League Baseball. It's all here on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Wednesday early edition of Overtime. We're off the air at noon, making way for the Minnesota Twins. Game 3 against those pesky Houston Astros. 12:40, the start time to that ball game right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. We continue chopping it up. Baseball season continuing for Augustana Viking baseball, a regional round winner onto the Super Regionals against Central Missouri this weekend. Head coach Tim Huber, always a busy guy, it seems, this time of year. Welcome back into the show, coach. How you doing this week?
I'm good. I'm back. My back doesn't like me. I'm back on a bus again, but I'll take it.
Hey, certainly you will. Have you and the Viking program talked about getting an Airbnb there in Warrensburg? It seems like you guys are there every single year this time of year.
Yeah, it's kind of becoming a running joke. I think it's 4 of the last 5, and we've been down there quite a bit. And Coach Crooks and I have kind of talked a little bit about that. I don't know if we're happy to see each other or not happy to see each other this time of year, but it's becoming a theme for sure.
And I know your fans are happy that the season continuing again, Coach, into the Super Regional round. Take us through the regional win against the Gorillas of Pittsburgh State. You lost to them early in the weekend 7-1, and you handed them back-to-back losses to punch your way into the Super Regional round 10-8, 13-7. Take us through that regional from start to finish and what it meant to the program.
I don't know if we knew exactly where we're at going into it. We've been playing good baseball, and we beat a solid Northwest Missouri team, and got the chance to play Pitt State in round 2, and we didn't hit. Their guy gave up only 3 hits against us and went complete game, pitched really well for Pitt State. And so then you jump into the loser's bracket, you never know from there, and we beat Arkansas Tech on Friday in the first game, and then a rematch with Pitt State, and we played really good baseball, scored some runs, as you mentioned. And I told our guys after that game that would have been Saturday, I guess, now my days are running together. But in after game 2 Saturday, when we beat Pitt and got to get to Sunday, and said, so now they got the pressure on them a little bit. They're the host, they're the number 3 team in the country, and they're supposed to win, and now we get into their pitching staff and see how much depth they have. And sure enough, I knew that would be an advantage for us. And I think that proved to be the difference.
And certainly another big time win, 45-14, the record, and a regional victory for Augustana Viking baseball. They'll match up with Central Missouri in the Super Regional Thursday. That's tomorrow at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday, if necessary, game 3 of the best of 3 series will be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Coach Tim Huber, our guest on a Wednesday. Coach, what did you make of your team's offensive firepower? You know, it's been there a good portion of the season, but as you mentioned, this is a little bit of a different style regional than you've seen lately relative to the end of your season. You got the great pitching crew, but you guys were playing in some pretty high stakes, high scoring games there towards the end of the regional round.
Yeah, I'd say surprising is a good way to put it. You know, statistically, we've got some solid guys, and I've said this a lot, and I don't mean it disrespectful to our players, but we're really, really good when the pitching leaves pitches in the middle. Mm-hmm. And Pitt State did that for us. They left some pitches up in the zone and in the middle of the plate, and it's a park where the wind was pushing out pretty good, and we took advantage of that. We hit some doubles and home runs, and just kind of kept the pressure on them. So we're very capable of scoring some runs. You know, we have some talent there, but we just got to get better in the games. And the first Pitt State game was a good example, and I expect to see this against Central Missouri, where pitchers execute pitches and they pitch, right? I mean, when guys make pitches, you can't just like punt and go sit in the dugout. You got to go mm-hmm. compete. So that's a big focus for us, is just, you know, find a way to, when they make a good pitch, still get a hit here and there and not worry about the doubles and the home runs and get on base and put the pressure on them that way. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, I like when we do hit pitches and take advantage of pitcher mistakes, but we got to get more balance for sure.
Coach, talk to me about the pitching staff, because this year they've been a big-time strength of your program. Over the five games this past weekend, they allowed 10, 7, 2, 8, and 7. Certainly not ideal. But what do you make of the test that they received in the regional and how it might sharpen them up for the super regional?
Well, you know, I referenced the wind was blowing out, and mm-hmm. and so every game, it was going to be an offensive weekend for sure. Right. And our guys did enough on the mound. They really did. And, you know, I think the challenge that we run into, and we saw this a little bit as we've been walking some guys, and we got to stay away from that. So if we're throwing strikes, we're the top team in the country and striking guys out per nine innings right now. So we're getting ourselves out of some messes with just striking people out, but we just can't get ourselves into those spots. And you get to this time of the year and you got to make the other team hit. And so we saw a little bit of walks again this weekend. And, but at the end of the day, I would say the biggest thing I saw from our staff is just the resilience to keep going after it and keep attacking and not, you know, it's just been a mentality thing for us this year to not worry about the failures. You know, if the walk was a failure or if somebody hit a double on you, that's a failure. It's the, you know, so what, next pitch kind of mentality. And I thought our pitching staff did an awesome, awesome job of that this past weekend, and just understanding that, yeah, maybe I didn't do what I wanted to against that guy, but there's another hitter in the box, and I got to take care of business.
Hey, Coach, certainly early on in your Auggie career, dating back to 2009, you guys were kind of middle of the pack in the NSIC, 6th, 7th place finish, 5th, 4th, but you climbed your way up to pretty much every year, 1st or 2nd, dating all the way back to 2015. So I'm going to ask you this question about the program and the confidence of the guys. What do you think it means that so many guys on this roster, whether they be freshmen or sophomore, youngster guys, walk-ons, how much confidence is there that they're around fellow players that have been there, done that, been to a World Series, been on a deep run, been to Cary? How much does the program's experience kind of build on itself and pay dividends year over year, especially with these youngsters getting more opportunities here on the roster this year?
Yeah, hopefully we're good here. You were cutting out a little bit, so I'm going to guess I am a little as well.
I still got you.
Perfect. Good to hear. I think we do have some guys that are holdovers from the 2023 team when we went back to the World Series, but not much. You know, really a lot of it is myself, our coaching staff. JT Mix was on our national championship team back in 18, and so I think there is a little bit of leaning on guys that were here in 2023 and made it to a World Series and figured out what it looks like to make a run. And I've kind of referenced this year a little bit too, though. I'm like, you guys just, you got to trust me. You are good enough. This is what it looks like. These are the things we have to do. You know, and I think that's a benefit of having an experienced coach, I guess, that when they are young, they don't know what to expect. And, you know, we're starting 4 sophomores positionally, and they didn't even get to go to a regional last year, so let alone win a regional. So they do have to lean a little bit on, you know, that experience and the scouting reports and things like that. And really, it is just it's a trust thing. And I think we have that going on in our program that, you know, like you referenced, they know that the guys have been here, have been through it before, whether it's the veterans on the team or the coaches. And so we're just putting them in positions to be successful, and then they just got to go play.
45-14, the record for Augustana Viking baseball. Season continues this weekend, beginning tomorrow afternoon against Central Missouri down in Warrensburg, Missouri, Thursday at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday, if necessary, Game 3 for a trip to Cary, North Carolina, and the D2 College World Series, if necessary, Sunday at 1 o'clock. Lastly, Augustana baseball head coach Tim Huber, give us the scout of this program you know pretty darn well, Central Missouri Mule Baseball. A scout and a few keys to punching a ticket to Cary by the weekend's end, Coach.
It's an easy one. Keep them off the bases. Pitching staff's gotta not walk guys. I don't know if they're leading the country, but they're pretty close to top in the country. They have 180 some stolen bases this year, and that's how their program plays, and they always have. We're familiar with them. We worked on that yesterday, so if we can keep them off base, and, you know, just because that just puts so much pressure on our pitching staff when they run so well. And, you know, it's being aware of Bill Backpick, and they'll do some things on defense that, you know, they're just an aggressive team. You know, I think the other piece from an offensive perspective is we have to be ready to hit. You know, they're going to attack you. Their pitching staff has a little bit of velocity. We've seen that a little, but maybe not quite to the extent we're going to see this weekend. So, I would expect it's going to be good baseball games. I don't know if this is a great prediction, but I think the scores are going to be lower, you know, than what they were this past weekend. And when the scores are lower, that just means you got more pressure on you, and they're closer games, and every little thing you do wrong gets magnified. So hopefully play some clean baseball. That'll be big.
Certainly a lot of fun to follow along. GoAuggie.com. GoAuggie.com/live. Auggie baseball from Warrensburg, Missouri, battling the Central Missouri Mules. Game one of a best of three series tomorrow at 5 o'clock. That's head coach Tim Huber on the road to a home away from home, if you will. Coach, go get them this weekend, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks as always for the time.
I appreciate it, Bert. You have a good one.
All right, we absolutely will. Fun and easy to root for Auggie baseball this time of year as they're making another deep playoff run. Auggie baseball dating back quite a ways. Again, first or second in the conference every single year back to 2016 when they finished third in 2015, but certainly a very impressive resume. College World Series winner, Auggie baseball head coach Tim Huber moments ago on a Wednesday edition of Overtime. We're off the air at noon, making way for the Twins game three against those Houston Astros. That game at 12:40, pregame coverage at noon here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. A reminder as well, tonight you can watch Spurs and Thunder game two coverage, or listen to Spurs and Thunder game two coverage at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN Sioux Falls. When we come back, we got a lot to get to. When I initially booked this interview with Chris Clark of the Locked On Chiefs podcast, we did not have the drama that Rashee Rice provided yesterday. 30 days in jail for a probation violation in regards to testing positive for THC. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on the draft, the offseason acquisition of Kenneth Walker III, the drafting of Mansoor Delane, the spectacular cornerback out of LSU, as well as other questions. How about the ceiling and floor of the Kansas City Chiefs? League-wide, I'm not so sure that there's a team with a wider ceiling and floor than Kansas City. We're so used to this team winning 12, 13, 14, 15 games a year. Last year, they won 6 games. I think that would be the floor this year. Patrick Mahomes going to come back healthy. I think that gets you at least to 8 wins if he's healthy the whole year. Travis Kelce back in the fold. Improved running game. You're not relying on old rusty, trusty Kareem Hunt any longer. You got a stud in the backfield in Kenneth Walker III. You drafted Emmett Johnson out of Nebraska. You brought in some other ancillary pieces. You get a feeling the Chiefs could finish anywhere from 7 wins all the way up to 12, 13 wins. And that, of course, is the bullish nature of how we think about Kansas City. For me, I'd probably land 10, 11, competing for the division in the AFC West, because Denver, a little shaky. The Chargers, good, not great. And the Raiders are the Raiders. They'll be better, but not much better this year, at least. We'll dive into the Chiefs talk coming up next. Chris Clark of Locked On Chiefs, as we say so long to an early Wednesday, May 20th edition of Overtime, next right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
The best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up the middle of the week Wednesday edition of Overtime. A reminder, we're clearing the airwaves in about 20 minutes, making way for Minnesota Twins pregame game 3 against those Houston Astros. 12:40 the start time, pregame coverage noon, right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. That's baseball. Let's talk football now as we head to the ESPN hotline. Welcome in some Chiefs talk. Chris Clark at Chris Clark NFL on Twitter, host of the Locked On Chiefs podcast. You can view that, Locked On Chiefs on Twitter, and find it anywhere you get your podcasts and also on YouTube. Chris, welcome into the show, my friend. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's awesome to have you. Of course, the tough news for Kansas City. We did not envision talking about this. We booked up the interview just on a draft recap chat, off-season preview chat for the Chiefs is Rashee Rice's latest legal trouble. He's going to be in jail for the next 29 days, 30 days as of yesterday. What do you make of the Rashee Rice situation and kind of the latest here as he reportedly violated probation in regards to a prior legal incident? What's the latest reaction from you on the Rashee Rice situation, Chris?
Just a dumb move. Mm-hmm. I understand the NFL is kind of lax on some of the stuff that they've allowed when it comes to that type of scenario. But when you are on probation and you have that specifically written into your probation, you can't mess up and do something like that. So not a smart move on his part, and he's definitely cost himself millions of dollars.
And certainly that's a very frustrating situation. So the obvious pivot here is for Chief fans and people that want the Chiefs to fail is to say, okay, who do they have behind Rashee Rice? Kind of set the stage for us. What does that wide receiver depth chart look like beyond the Chiefs' number one wide receiver who's going to miss a decent portion of the offseason training activities?
Well, Xavier Worthy is going to be guy number one behind him. And then you have Tyquan Thornton, who you brought back on a two-year deal. So those are the two guys that are going to be the biggest, I don't know that I would say benefactors, but the biggest contributors outside of Rashee Rice. Then you have Jalen Royals, who you drafted last year. You have Cyrus Allen, who you drafted this year. The real question is going to be is, are you going to make a move and go try to, you know, sign somebody or trade for somebody? I mean, there's, some free agents out there that you could look at. And you could maybe look at getting in a trade some wide receivers that are definitely still out there that you could maybe consider trading for. But the Chiefs have a salary cap problem, too. So it becomes a little bit more complex.
And certainly there's a lot of questions. Chris, an obvious one, a fan question is Tyreek Hill still out there. What do you make of the percentage that he could be back with Kansas City? Is that realistic in your eyes at all?
I think it's possible. I won't say probable. There's a lot of questions about his injury and his recovery and whether or not he's going to be ready for the NFL season. He had a pretty severe knee injury. So the question is, did he get all the surgery and did he get to the point where all of that is taken care of? If he did, then maybe he's able to come back in September, October. Maybe he still needs some more time. That's the big question with Tyreek Hill, and it's a waiting game with him at this point.
We're talking Kansas City Chiefs with Chris Clark of the Locked On Chiefs podcast. You can find it on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, also on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs, tagged in today's show log. Chris, let's talk about the draft recap. It was pretty obvious the Chiefs went after defense early. They spent their first four picks on the defensive side, final three on offense. What did you make? What was your personal grade for the Chiefs and what they did on draft weekend?
I would have to give them a B or a B plus. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job going and defining exactly who they wanted, and they went and got the guys that they wanted. I know a lot of people didn't like giving up a third-round pick, and some people argue that Delaney would have been available at 9. I don't think he would have been. I think that when you look at who drafted right behind Kansas City at 6, I think both the Redskins and the Saints had a chance or may have taken Delaney at 7 and 8. So going and getting your guys, the thing you have to do at that point, and then adding a defensive tackle – while not a defensive end, you got probably the best defensive tackle or one of the best defensive tackles, one of the top two guys versus defensive end. You're adding, a fourth or fifth maybe defensive end at 29 where you pick. So it made a lot of sense in that regard.
Kansas City Chiefs also getting involved in free agency, signing Kenneth Walker III to be their starting running back, drafting Emmett Johnson out of Nebraska. Chris, what kind of confidence do you have in that new reformed running back room that is probably a breath of fresh air after the Kareem Hunt experiment, et cetera, Isaiah Pacheco recently? How are you feeling about the running back room today on the roster?
Well, I will say this. When you look back at, you know, Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, both of them were not what the Chiefs need in the running game. And while Kareem Hunt gave you a lot of value getting short yardage, if he busted through and there could have been a, you know, 20 or 30 yard gain, he was getting at most 10 or 11. He just doesn't have the speed to make those types of moves, and he's not explosive anymore. Pacheco just didn't have the real vision for this team. So at this point, I do think that you're going to have a huge upgrade in Kenneth Walker. And then you look at what Emmett Johnson did in college, and I think you have to feel really good about where this running back room is. The question is always going to be, is Andy Reid going to use it? The one caveat I will say that's going to be different this year than it has been in most is Mahomes is coming off a season-ending injury, and leaning on the running game early and using that running game early would make a ton of sense and, you know, hopefully get them going in the right direction on offense.
Chris Clark is our guest, one of the hosts of the Locked On Chiefs podcast, top-tier Chiefs coverage for all you KC fans out there. Chris, how surprised are you that Patrick Mahomes could and likely will be ready week one against the Denver Broncos? To me, that was a pretty big shocking storyline, and now it feels like it's kind of quickly settling into something that could be concrete for week one. How surprised are you about Mahomes' availability early on?
I'm surprised. I'm not shocked. Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, you look at Mahomes and you look at his past, it kind of makes sense that he's going to be in a scenario where he can go out and do stuff like that. But is it going to be something that I expect for sure he's going to be available week one? I would say I'm probably closer to 70% sure that he'll be ready week one, whereas, you know, a month or two ago I would have told you there's a less than 50-50 chance he's ready to go just because of the normal time recovery. But it's really hard because you never really want to bet against Patrick. He always seems to overcome, and he has a different body than most people and seems to be able to bounce back from things a lot quicker. So it does seem like he could be back. But the bigger question when it comes to Mahomes is, if he is out there and he's back, that's fine, but he's not going to be the quarterback he was in 2025. He's not going to be able to run around and scramble, or you don't want him to be running around and scrambling like that. So you want to take some pressure off of him, which is, I think, one of the big reasons they went out and signed Kenneth Walker. Yeah, they need to get better in the running back room, but Walker should give them the ability to take some pressure off Patrick.
The Kansas City Chiefs schedule is also out. They'll have a week five bye week, six primetime games, including Monday Night Football out of the gates against the Denver Broncos. That game will be at home. Let's talk about the schedule, initial gut feeling on it. And also, I said leading into our interview today, Chris, I think that the Chiefs have a pretty big gap between their floor and their ceiling this year. What do you kind of view as the team's ceiling and floor? And just to comment on their schedule that was released along with the rest of the league last week.
Well, I will say this. I hate having a week five bye. I think that's really a bad situation. But I think you could also make an argument that the NFL is looking at it from the perspective, and maybe Kansas City needs to look at it from the perspective of, if Mahomes isn't 100% ready to go week one, do you have him sit the first month of the season, have Justin Fields start, and hope that you can find a way to get to 3-1 and Patrick comes back after the bye? That would make a ton of sense to me. You know, when you talk the floor, it's all going to come back down to the health of the roster. I never would have expected that they would get to, you know, where they were last year, but a large part of that is injuries on the offensive line and different injuries that they've dealt with. So when it comes to floor, I mean, obviously it's possible if injuries pop up again and Mahomes goes down or you have other injuries, that you could be talking missing the playoffs again. But ceiling, I think they have a chance of, you know, if the offense clicks and the defense shows signs, which I think they will with the young, with the new young players, they can get back to the Super Bowl and potentially win a Super Bowl. So I think it can go both ways. It's just going to be a question of, can they stay healthy and can they be better than they were? And when you look at last year and they're playing their fifth and sixth offensive tackles late in the season, that kind of says a lot about how the season went.
Kansas City Chiefs talk, filling up your cup there. Locked On Chiefs, the place to stay locked and loaded onto. Locked On Chiefs, you can find the podcast on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Also tagged in today's show log, that is Chris Clark, one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Chiefs show. Chris, thanks so much as always for the time, my friend. We'll do it again, hopefully sometime down the road. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right, we will. Chris Clark of the Locked On Chiefs podcast. Again, find it on YouTube, also tagged in today's show log. Kansas City Chiefs talk. Later in the week, we'll be talking Denver Broncos as we navigate through our area teams at this stage of the offseason. We're really making the bed. We're talking about free agency, talking about the NFL draft retrospectively, also talking about the offseason questions, and now, courtesy of the news yesterday from Rashee Rice, who was set to be rehabbing from an injury today instead of being in jail there in the Dallas area. Rashee Rice should be rehabbing and back for OTAs, and the wide receiver one, the alpha receiver in that Chiefs receiving core, might be there, might not be there. We'll see about OTAs and moving forward into training camp and other possible hurdles ahead for Rashee Rice. But that receiver room, not necessarily what I would call deep at this stage for Kansas City. You take a look at it. Xavier Worthy has the first-round pedigree. He's not been amazing in his young career. Tyquan Thornton, decent player, speedster as well. Jalen Royals, a fourth-round pick last year. Not a lot of snaps on the football field to speak about. And other names, Nico Remigio, Cyrus Allen, Jason Brownlee, and many more on that roster. But the Chiefs certainly would miss Rashee Rice quite a bit if he's going to miss some time in the 2026 NFL season. A lot of questions for Kansas City, chiefly centered around the health and effectiveness of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and other pieces on the roster. But make no mistake about it, that solidification of the run game going to make a big difference next year as Kenneth Walker III slots in as RB1 in Kansas City. Quickly here, we'll dive into some quick baseball updates before we say so long to this Wednesday edition of Overtime. Also news from Wimbledon, which is still on the summer calendar. Two-time Wimbledon champ Carlos Alcaraz will not be playing the grass court Grand Slam event next month because of a lingering wrist injury. Alcaraz injured his wrist at the Barcelona Open last month, forcing him out of the French Open, which starts this weekend. And really brutal news. We will miss out on one of, if not the brightest young star in the tennis world, not in one, but two majors coming up this summer. Alcaraz out of the French Open and now announcing this week he's also out of Wimbledon coming up later on this summer. It was only a matter of time before Washington Nationals outfielder James Wood hit a grand slam, but an inside the park grand slam like the one Wood smashed in Tuesday night's 9-6 victory over the Mets. I didn't think it would be like this, Wood said. That was a fun way to get it. Down 5-0, the Nationals had the bases loaded, two away in the second inning against the Mets starter Nolan McLean. Wood hit a first pitch sweeper to the opposite field, glanced off a leaping Nick Morabito's arm and bounded into center. A couple other scrambles there, finds his way around all of the bases, an inside the park grand slam. First time we've seen that for any team in 5 years, since 2022. St. Louis Cardinals shortstop Mason Wynn got some good news yesterday, had an MRI on his left knee, and it came back, quote, clean, according to manager Oliver Marmol. Wynn legged out a fielder's choice play and exited Sunday's loss to Kansas City in the seventh inning with left knee soreness. The good news is MRI coming back clean on that particular scan. And lastly, Vikings news. We got more news from Minnesota in regards to the general manager search. Vikings owner Mark Wilf said yesterday, team is ready to move on to the second round of interviews, and the team has reportedly picked five candidates, and then there were five in the search process. Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports reporting that they want to have second meetings with their executive vice president of football operations, current GM Rob Brzezinski, Broncos assistant GM Reed Burkhart, Bills assistant GM, former Viking front office guy Terrence Gray, Rams assistant GM John McKay, and Seahawks assistant GM Nolan Teasley. So Brzezinski, Burkhart, Gray, McKay, and Teasley, your final five for the Minnesota Vikings GM job, at least as reported moments ago at Pro Football Talk at NBCSports.com. That is our show. We will talk to you tomorrow at 11 when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.